Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. With Halloween nearly upon us, we're going to turn now to the true masters of disguises, cephalopods. Cuttlefish and octopus can change not only the color, but also the texture of their skin in a split second to make themselves either invisible or impossible to miss, depending on the situation. Engineers at Cornell University recently announced that they'd developed a stretchy, programmable material based on cephalopod skin. To do that, they worked with cephalopod camouflage expert Roger Hanlon. He's a senior scientist at the Marine Biological Laboratory and a professor at Brown University. Roger, it's been a while. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Heather. It's great to be back.
What I really want to know is, have your friends at Cornell made you an octopus costume yet?
Not yet. I'm really disappointed, but I'm looking forward to it. They're characters enough that this will happen.
All right. So where did the idea for this texture-changing material come from?
The idea is a longstanding one, or let's say a desire in the materials science engineering world, because in industry and society, we don't have collectively what they call soft actuators, which are materials that are basically soft and flexible, but that you can control their shape for many possible applications.
Like what?
Well, applications like morphing kinds of shirts and materials and fabrics, or let's say you wanted to absorb more light to bring in more thermal heat in the sun. If you morph the surface texture into many more shapes that would absorb more light, then simple function like that. You can do this with some hard materials, but you can't do it with soft materials. That's why this paper is getting so much attention, is now they have a so-called soft material in which they can program it into different shapes. And this has been an effort that's been going on for decades. And finally, you know, this group at Cornell has looked at the only animal group that can do this really well. It happens to be the group we work on, an octopus or a cuttlefish. They can go from flat skin, you know, two-dimensional flat skin, and all of a sudden this bump appears in a very specific shape into 3D. And you start to look at the skin and the muscle, and it's basically soft muscle that can be programmed into specific shapes. And these engineers, material scientists, started looking at that and said, if we could emulate that, there would be a lot of applications. So they've been working on this for years and contacted us because our lab is the one that really did the study of the cuttlefish skin in particular and all these bumps, which we call papillae. And behaviorally, that's very important for camouflage, but our lab also does the biomechanics. We look at the structure of the skin and the muscles and how they actually produce these odd shapes. And we also look at the neural control because these shapes are produced from flat to 3D in as fast as 200 milliseconds. That's 1/5 of 1 second. That's a human eye blink.
Wow.
And so it's not only capable of different shapes, but it can do it fast. And every degree of freedom from totally flat to a trilobed or a bilobed or a conical shape and everything in between as it morphs up. It's not like it pops up just in one shape instantaneously. It goes through many degrees of freedom. You know, engineers look at that and say, oh, we could do all kinds of cool things with that.
I mean, and so it's the material, not the cephalopods, but this new material that they've made is pneumatic, right? You like pump air into it, and that's how the different parts kind of come up to make these different shapes?
Right. It's pneumatically powered, so to speak. So for their material to go from flat into 3D, the power source they use is pneumatic air, high-pressure air. But the material itself is an elastic polymer that can stretch to a certain degree, and they can program that stretchiness to a certain shape. And so maybe a crude analogy I can make would be if you go to the county fair and they have these balloons and they say, do you want me to twist this balloon into a kangaroo or a zebra or whatever it is? And they take that balloon, and that balloon has a fixed air shape, but the balloon material itself has some elasticity. And if they do it right, they can pull a big ear out here or a leg out there, and they can control the shape. That's somewhat what they're doing at Cornell with these materials, but they needed some framework, some basic framework on how it might work. And that's where our animal group came in, because they can do this. So they looked at the mechanics and the skin and how the muscles were arranged, and they used that as their basic framework and template to make these programmable, stretchable, somewhat stretchable elastomeric materials. And that's the breakthrough. And the reason the paper's in Science and, you know, not another journal that's more discipline specific is that There are many possible applications for this, and folks have been trying to do this for a very long time. So this is kind of a breakthrough event in which the inspiration came from the ocean. And that's a weird connection, but, you know, that's what happens in Woods Hole and places like the MVL and Woods Hole Oceanographic. We find unusual things that animals do from the ocean, and sometimes we can emulate them in the engineering world.
I'm talking with Roger Hanlon of the Marine Biological Laboratory in Brown University. Let's go back to those animals and how they do this, because they're not pneumatically powered and programmable, at least not in the sense that we're programming. So what do we know about how they go from flat to textured skin? I mean, you said a little bit about, you know, how this works with muscles, but what are the muscles pulling on? Are they just, you know, pulling the skin in different directions? So that's not something that our muscles can do to our skin. So what do they have going on there?
Yeah, it's pretty unusual, but I can make a couple quick analogies. One would be the human tongue or an elephant trunk or an octopus arm. And this is called a muscular hydrostat. And that term, little too scientific, but it's accurate. It's muscular. Their muscles are being used as the incompressible material inside, and hydrostat means it's sort of a fluid-filled chamber. But they don't waste their space on fluid. The muscle itself is the fluid, and it acts as a single unit like the balloon with air in it. And basically, to form a simple conical papilla, just a little bump that comes straight up, there would be, in the flat two-dimensional surface, there would be concentric circles of muscles radiating out, and there would be other muscles oriented straight up and down vertically. And so when those horizontally concentric circle muscles contract and the vertical ones relax, then it's a fluid that's got to go somewhere, and that's the muscle, and it pops straight up. So this is basically how you get a simple conical papilla. But when you look at the papillae on these animals, they have this wide variety of shapes. Some are trilobed, and some have two bumps, and some have three bumps with two bumps on them. And so the way these are constructed, and it was Justine Allen who led the study as her PhD at Brown and MBL, she was able to look at the muscle orientations very carefully, and she could see which orientations of muscle gave you a specific shape. And so it's really quite simple in one sense, that you just have complementary muscles pulling one way or the other, and when they do, something has to move because it's a muscular hydrostat and it's a set volume, if you will.
You can get a lot of different shapes, as you mentioned, but it seems like with, you know, if you've got concentric circles of muscles, you've got, you know, that sets a place where you could have a bump coming up. It's not infinite shapes that this octopus skin could jump into.
No, it's not infinite shapes, but we're looking very carefully at this, and we're finding, you know, if you just take one species like the cuttlefish or one species of octopus, you tend to find anywhere from 5 to 15 different shapes of different papillae over the body. Now, these are for camouflage. This is how they are really functioning. So, you know, the soft-bodied octopus and a cuttlefish is vulnerable to prey because, unlike their other molluscan cousins, they don't have an external shell to hide in. So they have this beautiful camouflage patterning that we know about from pigmentation and so forth in skin. But in addition, they add this three-dimensionality. And so if they want to hide an edge, a smooth edge against a jagged background would stand out to a visual predator. They make their own edge of their body jagged by putting up these bumps all over the skin. So not only do they have, you know, a finite variety of papillae shapes and sizes on the body that will help them go into multiple habitats, but we also know that each one of those different sets is controlled by the brain differently, which means that the brain is set up with neural control of specific sets of papillae. So papillae for camouflage are obviously very important to this animal group because they can fine-tune 9 or more sets of different bump shapes in the skin to fine-tune the camouflage to the exact microhabitat they're sitting in. So the camouflage becomes extraordinarily effective.
I'm talking with Roger Hanlon of the Marine Biological Laboratory and Brown University about camouflage as it's accomplished by octopus and cuttlefish. As you were just getting at, I mean, I think one of the coolest things about your research is you've spent some time even trying to define what is camouflage and figured out that it's not just matching the background. It's sometimes looking even very different than the background, but in a way that confuses animals or, you know, potential predators that are looking at this cuttlefish or octopus. But how do the octopuses know what will be effective? Right? There's the mechanical, like, how do you accomplish the camouflage? And then there's the neurological, how do you know what's going to work as camouflage? And you've been trying to get at part of this, at least, by trying to figure out how cephalopods and other animals see the world using these really high-tech cameras. So what are you doing with these cameras? How do you see the world through an animal's eyes?
Well, sort of two aspects of that. The first is that this is all controlled by visual input. The octopus or the cuttlefish looks at its immediate surrounds, assesses how bumpy it is, so to speak, the three-dimensionality of the surrounding algae or coral or seaweed or whatever it is, and then they can reproduce that with considerable accuracy in the skin. So that is the blending in aspect that you mentioned. In other times, they will use those big bumps, sometimes as part of a visual signal when attracting a mate or having a fight with a rival male. And in that case, they'll put different bumps up. The point is that it's visually controlled. And one of the great enigmas that still remains many in the system is that how do these animals look at a background? And, you know, they're looking essentially with one eye because a cuttlefish or an octopus has its eyes where our ears are. In other words, they don't have binocular stereopsis. They can't figure out 3D by using two eyes. They've got one eye looking at the background, and they're picking up three-dimensionality and reproducing it in the skin. Vision scientists have no clue how that works. It is more and more amazing. We cannot explain that. And we were asking Justine to take that subject on for a PhD, and all of our committee members said, no, that's a 10-year project. That's not a 3-year project.
That might be a lifetime project.
So we haven't addressed that. It just gives you a clue about how sophisticated it is, and we continue to be amazed. Now, there are a lot of species out there that haven't been looked at, so we know there's this crazy thing called the hairy octopus, and it looks like it's got spaghetti noodles all over its body. It's incredible. It's got these fine, long, thin papillae, like angel hair spaghetti all over its body. And it looks like a, you know, what a hunter would call a ghillie suit, which has all the frilly stuff on the edge.
Right, yeah.
And so there's a great variety. We haven't been able to look at that, I think, on a comparative basis. So it would be interesting to look at that. So engineers can possibly look at how really different shapes of soft actuators could be made based on an animal group. I think there's a lot more to do once we've opened the door to this bio-inspired approach.
That's Roger Hanlon. He's a senior scientist at the Marine Biological Laboratory and a professor at Brown University studying cephalopod camouflage. Roger, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Next week, one of this year's Nobel Prize winners talks sleep, jet lag, and what daylight savings time is doing to your body and brain. This is Living Lab Radio. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.